Growing Pains, a psych fanfic by Things with Wings, read by Sophie Nisba. The pairing is Gus Sean. This fic contains parents spanking their children and prepubescent children who have sexual desires and erotic or kinky thoughts. All sex occurs between consenting characters who are of age and does include some light pain play and punishment. Summary. It's a perfectly valid erotic identity, Sean. Growing Pains. Gus and Sean had been in trouble with Mr. Spencer before, and even though it was sometimes scary or involved weird punishments like having to paint the garage door or clean Mr. Spencer's car, in Gus's house, if you do something bad, you get punished with a long conversation on the golden rule and a hug and some time alone in your room, which is why Gus tries really hard not to misbehave at home. Mr. Spencer doesn't get angry or yell, any more than he usually does, or hit anybody, like the drunk guy in that public service announcement about domestic violence on PBS. Gus knows the signs of child abuse, because he's the official liaison between Mrs. Sanderson's third-grade class and Officer Kim, the lady cop who comes by the school on Wednesday afternoons, and he's read all the pamphlets that Officer Kim has ever given them. This time, though, it's different. Gus knew it was different even before they got caught, because normally when they were doing something bad, it was something that would make a mess or constitute what Mr. Spencer called improper use of resources. Like, for example, the time that they filled Sean's toy wagon with canned black beans to make a pretend swamp where they could play with the Yoda figurine that Gus got for his birthday. Or the time they made themselves mummy costumes using toilet paper and banana pudding. Back when they were kids, they did that kind of thing all the time. Now that they're older and in third grade, things are different. What they're doing this time isn't making a mess, and it isn't improper use of resources. Maybe because what they're doing this time isn't a game, in Gus's opinion. From what Gus can piece together from PBS public service announcements and Officer Kim's pamphlets, it's stealing. I don't even care, Sean says loudly, which probably means that he does care. They don't notice anything anyway. Boost me up. At 9 years old, Gus has a long history as the guy who does the boosting up when Sean has a dumb idea, and his innate respect for law and order is overwhelmed by force of habit. Sean's white-socked foot fits into Gus's palm like it always does, and Gus braces his body against the warm weight of Sean's calf as he holds him up. Sean reaches as high as he can, just high enough to touch the top shelf of Mr. and Mrs. Spencer's closet. Higher, Sean says. Gus lifts him higher. It feels like it takes a long time, and Gus's arms are starting to get kind of sore, but eventually Sean says, "Got it." Gus moves to let Sean down again, but before Sean's feet are on the carpet, there's a sudden loud crashing sound. Gus turns his head to look and sees that Sean's knocked something else out of the closet, trying to pull out the box of baseball cards, and it's landed on the hard surface of the dresser. There's glass everywhere. "Uh-oh," Sean says. Gus is already halfway to the bedroom door when Mr. Spencer walks in. "We're not mad at you, Burton," Mrs. Spencer explains. After a lot of yelling, Mr. Spencer told Gus to go wait in the hall while he dealt with Sean, and he pushed the door closed, but the door didn't close all the way, so now, sitting outside in the hall with Sean's mom, Gus could still see into the bedroom, could see through the crack in the door. Mr. Spencer raises his arm slowly into the air, holding his palm flat, then brings it down firmly. Gus can't see that part. He can only see Mr. Spencer's hand on the upstroke and Sean's ankles with his pants pooling over his socks and the tan skin of Sean's bare calves. But he can hear it, can hear the sound of a smack every time the hand comes down. Gus counts. 5. 6. "We know it wasn't your idea," Mrs. Spencer continues. 7. She's sitting next to Gus on the little wicker couch in the corner of the hall, but she's turned toward him so she can't see that the door is open, that Mr. Spencer forgot to close the door all the way. But Sean knew he wasn't allowed in our bedroom or in our closet, and he knew that he wasn't allowed to take those baseball cards. The hand comes down in Gus's peripheral vision. 8. 9. "And he broke something very valuable and sentimental to Henry and me." Gus glances up to meet her eyes, because it seems like she's waiting for it. She smiles at him. 10. "And we believe in punishing Sean for breaking the rules," she finished. 11. 12. Gus opens his mouth, and his voice comes out kind of squeaky for a second, before he coughs a little and tries again. I know that," he says. But he can't keep his eyes on her, because on the 12th smack, Sean makes a noise like he's in pain, and Gus can't help but look back to the partway open door and the way Sean's legs are moving around a little now, as if Sean wants to get up and get away but isn't allowed to yet. 13. 14. Mrs. Spencer glances behind her and notices the open door. Standing, she walks over and pulls it to, just as Gus counts 15, just as Sean's feet are allowed to slide down to the floor. Then the door is closed, and Gus can't see Sean anymore. Your parents don't spank, do they? Mrs. Spencer sounds curious, so Gus does what comes easiest to him and answers honestly. No, he says. His mouth is dry. Well, that's fine too, she says kindly. There are lots of different ways to raise children, and corporal punishment is one valid approach, so long as it's never done in anger. She furrows her brow. What I mean is, Henry isn't hitting Sean because he's mad, Burton. He's hitting him so he'll remember not to break the rules again. I understand, Gus says. Okay, Mrs. Spencer sighs. Let's go down to the kitchen, huh? We'll get you boys some juice or something. Your parents are picking you up at 4? Gus nods. When Sean comes down for his juice, he looks angry and his eyes are red like he's been crying. Are you okay? Gus asks. Sean nods and takes a drink. I hate it when they do that, Sean says after a minute. He wipes at his eye with the side of his hand. Gus doesn't know what else to do, so he hands Sean a cookie from the plate that Mrs. Spencer left out for them. Sean takes it, and they eat quietly for a few bites. When Gus gets up his courage, he asks, What's it like? Sean shrugs. It's not so bad, he says philosophically. At least it's over fast, so we can go play. Sean was at Gus's house when Gus got in trouble once, and he'd had to go home while Gus had his 2 hours of quiet time. What do you want to do? They had been taking Sean's dad's baseball cards to show Michael Filippation down the road, but now that's kind of off. Sean thinks for a minute, then smiles. I have an idea, he says. His hand creeps into Gus's hand and holds on tight. Sean tugs him across the kitchen. But you'll have to give me a boost. Gus lets himself be led by the warm, steady pressure of Sean's hand. That night, after his dad tucks him in, Gus thinks about what happened for a long time while he waits to fall asleep. He thinks about the way that Sean's pants had fallen around his ankles and the noise he made, like it really hurt. And he thinks about what he would say to Sean if it ever happened again, what he would do. His face is hot where he presses it into the pillow as he imagines, walking into the room, opening the door, saving Sean from his punishment somehow, or even taking the blame so that Sean didn't have to, saying it was his fault, taking Sean's place. Gus buries his face in his sleeping bag, trying not to laugh too loud. This is the best movie ever, Sean whispers, louder than his normal speaking voice. Gus shakes him by the shoulder, holding a finger to his lips. You'll wake everyone up, he says. He and Sean had promised they'd be asleep by now, but after Lethal Weapon, they decided to put on Animal House. It had been Gus's 12th birthday a week before, and Joy had given him basically the coolest present any older sister had ever given to a little brother. A stack of 2-week movie rentals, all R-rated, all films that Gus and Sean had desperately wanted to see. RoboCop and Aliens and Police Academy and The Terminator, all the movies that Gus had read about in Analog, all the movies that Sean had read about in Mad Magazine. Gus's parents thought they were downstairs watching kids' movies and playing Nintendo all day, but it's now past 1 in the morning and the house is quiet. I can't hear it, Sean complains, quieter now. He reaches for the remote control, but Gus grabs his wrist. It'll make too much noise, he hisses. Just get closer to the TV. They worm their way closer in their sleeping bags until they're only inches from the screen where Jim Belushi is starting a cafeteria food fight. Then the scene changes abruptly, and there's a guy walking into the Weird Rich fraternity house, wearing just his underpants and kneeling down to let someone hit him on the butt with a long wooden board, like a canoe paddle. It's embarrassing, and Gus doesn't know where to look, so he pretends it's just like the rest of the movie, and keeps his eyes on the screen and watches Sean out of the corner of his eye. Sean's still smiling from the food fight scene, but isn't laughing. Gus looks to Sean, then back to the movie, and then to Sean again. He squirms in his sleeping bag, and the guy on screen gets hit again, harder this time, rocking him forward as he kneels on the floor. Thank you, sir. May I have another? The movie guy says. It's supposed to be funny, and it sort of is, so Gus laughs a little, but another part of him wishes Sean weren't here so that he could rewind and play it again, maybe just the part where they hit him, before he talks, just so that he could see the way the guy rocks forward on his knees. "That part was weird," Sean whispers after the scene's over, putting his lips right next to Gus's ear so that they stay quiet. "It wasn't really funny, though." "Not really," Gus agrees, and Sean grins at him for no good reason, and Gus is glad that Sean's here after all, to share this secret with him. Later on in the movie, when Gus says something gross during the toga scene, Sean has to cover his mouth with his hand while he chokes on laughter, and he reaches out with his other hand and smacks Gus hard on the arm. Gus is grinning wide, and his arm is tingling where Sean hit him. "Thank you, sir. May I have another?" Gus says, just like the guy in the movie, as seriously as he can, before he starts laughing, too. This sends Sean into another fit of laughter, and they hunch up together on the rec room floor with the giggles, trying not to make too much noise, and Gus covers Sean's mouth to keep him quiet and holds him tight until it passes and they can breathe again. When they've settled down enough to sit up a little, Sean smiles at him slowly and reaches out. Gus holds still while Sean smacks him again, harder, in exactly the same place. "Anything you want, Gus," Sean says, dorky and serious, and it's like something blooms inside of Gus's chest, hot and soft and full of light. "I don't even care," Sean says quietly. "He doesn't pay attention to anything I do anyway. Boost me up." At 15 years old, Gus has a long history as the guy who does the boosting up when Sean has a dumb idea. But this time he shakes his head. "No way, Sean," he says. "Tell me what you're going to do up there first." Sean glares at him. "I'm going to sit on the garage roof as long as I can, until Henry comes to look for me," he says. Gus looks at him suspiciously. "That's all. That's all. Gus, seriously, are you going to help me out or not? Because I could just stand on the garbage can or something." "Fine, fine," Gus says. He bends one knee and makes a stirrup out of his hands. Sean steps into it, pushing the warm length of his skinny leg up against Gus's chest. Sean hasn't quite caught up to Gus in height yet, and it feels like he doesn't weigh anything at all. Gus lifts. "Okay, thanks, Gus," Sean says, once he's on the roof. "I'll see you tomorrow." "That's it? You just want me to leave you there? What if your dad doesn't come out and find you?" He has visions of Sean falling off the roof, or worse, sitting up there all night. "I'll be fine," Sean calls back. Hesitantly, Gus turns and starts the long walk home. He doesn't live in the same neighborhood as Sean anymore, not since Gus's mom got the promotion and they could afford the new place, but he still goes over to Sean's house and Sean still comes over to his house when they can. He pulls his Walkman out of the jacket pocket and turns over the tape. He's just pulling the headphones over his ears and has one foot on the sidewalk when he hears it, a crashing, smashing, breaking sound. He holds still for a second. It could be coming from the neighbor's house, or another crash. Gus spins around on his sneakers and runs full tilt back for the Spencer's garage. He drags the garbage can over to where the roof comes down low and scrambles up as fast as he can. "Hey, Gus," Sean says, and throws another rock. It breaks what's left of the bathroom window. Sean reaches into his pocket and pulls out another, round and smooth, like Sean had selected it just for this purpose. "Put the rock down, Sean," Gus says, holding up his hands like Sean's got a gun. This is nothing like how they practiced confronting an attacker in gym class. In gym class, even though he always picked Sean for his partner, Gus had never really imagined having to confront his best friend. "She's moving out," Sean says. "Next week." "Yeah, I know," Gus agrees. "Put down the rock." "Okay," Sean says equitably, and throws it. It sails smoothly through what Gus thinks is the window to the guest room. Crash, smash. "You're just doing this so your dad will come out here and Gus pauses because he doesn't really know what Sean's endgame is here. "Destruction of property, Gus," Sean says, tossing a rock up and down in his hand. "It doesn't require a motive, only a disturbed..." He lobs the rock at the last second floor window in their line of sight that's left intact, but this time it thunks harmlessly against the sideboard. "Mind." Suddenly there's a noise below them. "Sean!" Gus has never heard Mr. Spencer scream like that. Never. He freezes in fear. "Get the hell down here right now!" Gus would have thought that the point of Sean's being on the roof was to be out of his dad's reach when he came for him, so that even if the part where he got in trouble couldn't be prevented, it could be delayed until Mr. Spencer wasn't so mad anymore. But Sean just crawls to the edge of the roof and shimmies down the drainpipe with a grimly satisfied look on his face as soon as he hears his dad's voice. "Sean," Gus says helplessly. Sean looks at him, just for a second, and then he's gone, out of view. He shuffles down to the edge of the roof, thinking to follow, but reconsiders when he gets a glimpse of Mr. Spencer's face, and sort of crouches there, watching, as Mr. Spencer starts yelling. Sean just nods through the whole thing, with a smug little smile on his face, which only makes his dad madder. Gus holds his breath and tries to send a psychic message to Sean, like they used to do when they were kids. "Stop it! Stop it! You're making it worse! Stop! Why are you making him mad? Stop it!" But Sean either doesn't hear him or, more likely, doesn't listen to him, because he tosses his floppy hair out of his face and actually rolls his eyes so his dad can see. And Gus is scared even into psychic silence as Mr. Spencer stops cold, mid-rant, grabs Sean by the shoulder with one hand to twist him around and bend him over, and with the other hand he spanks Sean, hard, on the ass, twice. It happens so fast that Gus has to blink, not even sure he really saw it. Sean looks as surprised as Gus is. The smirk is gone from his face, replaced by pure shock. "Get in the house, Sean," Mr. Spencer says, not sounding angry anymore, but cool and collected, more like the way he usually sounds when Sean does something to piss him off. That tone is reassuring somehow, comforting. As Sean is marched inside, he glances back over his shoulder and catches sight of Gus still crouching on the roof. Gus can't really see his expression in that split second when their eyes meet, but he can imagine it. Embarrassment, anger, outrage, chagrin. Gus sits all the way down on the roof, then lets his legs hang off the side and breathes in and out, for a long time. Sean picks up the red Phantom action figure that Gus has set out on the dresser to be packed. "Dude, I can't believe you still have this." "It's a collector's item, Sean," Gus replies absently. He's trying to get all his books to fit into the three boxes his parents had mandated, and it's not going well. "I know," Sean says, and makes little fighting noises for a while, making the Red Phantom battle an invisible foe. Then, sighing, he packs the action figure in its original box and puts it with the rest of the stuff for storage. "You're such a dork." Gus rolls his eyes and takes the bait willingly, shoving at Sean's shoulder. "Whatever." Sean grins and acts like Gus's little push has unbalanced him. He pinwheels his arms and collapses backwards onto the neatly made twin bed. "Now see what you've done," Sean sighs. "There's no way I can possibly help you pack from here." "So, no change then." Gus stares at his books in his hands in dismay. How is he supposed to know in advance if he'll want to read X-Men or Batman, Neuromancer or Snow Crush? "Hey," Sean says from behind him. "Are you taking this bed with you?" Gus tosses the books onto the floor and goes to sit down next to Sean, who's still sprawled out on top of Gus's blue-striped comforter, taking up way more space than he should with his pointy elbows and long legs. They have beds in the dorms, as you'd know if you ever read any of the orientation information. "Right." Sean sits up a little, bounces up and down. "Remember when we were kids and we used to make forts in here?" Gus does remember. They'd pull the bed out from the wall just a little and slip a blanket behind the headboard bookshelf thing, then push the bed back. Gus's mom didn't like him moving the furniture, but when Sean was here, he always got a free pass somehow, and she would just smile if she saw them using the bedside table to expand the Lego city in the living room or using the kitchen chairs to build a better blanket fort. When Gus was younger, he sometimes thought that Sean had a kind of magic that he carried around with him, something that made things happen, good things. Things that couldn't happen in normal, everyday life. "I remember," he says, and throws himself backwards to lie next to Sean, sitting crossways on the bed. He hits his head on the wall. "Ow!" Sean laughs wildly, curling up in a ball beside him. "Thanks for the sympathy," Gus mutters. "You do it to yourself, man," Sean says. Then, without any warning, he presses his smile to Gus's mouth and kisses him softly. The fourth kiss of Gus's life, and his first with another boy. "What was that?" Gus asks, bewildered, when Sean stops. There's an old familiar mischief in Sean's eyes that he distrusts, with good reason. But Sean doesn't tease or make a joke, just shrugs and blinks slowly. "I don't know," he says. Do you wanna?" Gus does. Gus has, for years, wanted to, in that quiet way Gus sometimes thinks that he isn't allowed to have. But the idea that Sean is here offering it is so surreal that he can't even figure out what to say. So he takes his courage in his hands, closes his eyes, and moves forward to kiss Sean back. With his eyes closed, though, he ends up missing Sean's mouth, kissing his cheek and the upper part of his nose instead. He opens his eyes and laughs, and then Sean's kissing him for real, awkward but determined, on the mouth. "Okay," Gus says, between kisses, answering Sean's question. "Okay, yeah, Sean, come here, jeez, come here." And he touches his palm to Sean's back and shuffles closer to him on the bed. Sean is breathing fast and undoing his pants, so Gus follows Sean's lead and does the same. He feels strange, like he's been untethered from reality, or slipped into another dimension, floating in space. But at the same time, he feels too hot, nauseated, and his skin tingles wherever Sean touches him, on his arm, the sensitive skin at his waist, below his t-shirt. It seems like it takes no time at all until they're touching each other, Sean's dick strange and unfamiliar in his hand. Sean's hand suddenly strange and unfamiliar, too, where it's touching Gus. The room is quiet except for their slow, steady breathing together. Gus has never known Sean to refuse him anything, not anything he really wanted, so he closes his eyes and, greatly daring, pulls Sean's other hand around to his ass. For an endless second, Sean doesn't move at all, and Gus's heart catches in his throat. But then Sean's fingers spread firmly across the denim, and he squeezes, hard, pulling Gus a little closer. And when Gus opens his eyes, Sean is smiling at him and not letting him go, and it's perfect. After, they clean up and do up their pants, just in case Gus's mom comes home early, but they stay lying together in the little twin bed. Gus doesn't know what to say. "Hey, Gus," Sean says. "I need to tell you something." Gus licks his lips. "Yeah? About college." Gus can roll his eyes at that. It's safe, familiar territory. "Sean, I have told you before, there is no way they'll let you have a pet lizard." "I'm not going," Sean says, all in a rush. "I can't go." Gus is frozen for a second. But classes start in a week. "I got a job at the zoo," Sean says, sounding excited. "They have lizards there, I think." There are so many things Gus wants to say to this, starting with, "You are such a fucking asshole, and I can't believe you're only telling me now," and going all the way through to, "But you need college to live," and, "Oh God, does your mom know about this?" And, "They have geckos at the zoo, Sean. We went on a class trip in eighth grade, and you talked for 2 weeks about becoming a gecko wrangler on a gecko ranch." What Gus ends up saying is, "There is no way that you're leaving me for geckos, Sean." "I'm not leaving town, Gus. I'll be here. We'll still be friends." Tentatively, Sean puts one warm hand on Gus's shoulder. Gus swallows hard. You can't talk Sean Spencer out of anything. He knows that. But sometimes, if Gus tries hard, he can talk him into things. "We'll get together on the weekends," Gus says, warningly. "You're going to buy me beer and be my weirdo townie friend and tag along to frat parties where people will ask me who my weird townie friend is." "Gus, I'm not going to be suddenly older than you," Sean objects, but he's let out the breath that he was holding and some of the tension is gone from around his eyes. "And let's be honest, you're never going to go to a frat party, dude." "To ice cream socials and sock hops, then," Gus grumbles. "I will be your weird townie best friend date to the sock hop," Sean promises solemnly. "You better believe it," Gus agrees. Sean does sort of become his weird townie best friend for a while, but somewhere inside, Gus knows that it's only temporary, that by himself he can't hold Sean's attention forever. He gets weirdly okay with the idea and hangs out with Sean when he can, but the pre-med courses he's taking are demanding, and sometimes it's hard to find time to leave campus when he has labs and lectures and discussion sessions to attend, exams to study for, homework to do. Sean saves up his money from working at the zoo, the gas station, the art museum, the boxing club, and the haberdashery, and takes a trip to Europe. Gus misses him. When Sean comes back, it's only for 3 months before he's gone again. But during those 3 months, Gus hangs out with him and plays arcade games with him and goes along with him when he says he wants to go swimming, even though the water is freezing, and holds a towel for him when he emerges, shivering, from the ocean. The next trip is longer, and the next time he's back in town, it's only for 3 weeks. Gus starts to get used to thinking of Sean like a circus that might roll through town, like a thunderstorm, like a snow day. When he shows up, Gus drops everything, reshapes his life to make room for Sean again. And Sean slots back in next to him like he was never gone, leaves like he was never there. Gus doesn't really bother to get any new friends in college. He feels like he's used up all the friendship he has inside him, being friends with Sean his whole life, and mostly he's pretty okay with that. No one else gets his jokes anyway. For all his globetrotting, Sean seems to feel the same way. At least, he never really hangs out with anyone but Gus in Santa Barbara, and he never talks about the people he's met when he's away, except to tell funny stories about staying in hostels or buying train tickets. Gus does get a girlfriend for a little while, a girl he meets at a chamber music recital, and that's nice, kissing her in his dorm room when his roommate's away, letting her touch his chest and his back. Her name is Marta, and she's a junior, and they have sex a few times before they break up. And Gus likes the way she likes to be on top, but doesn't dream of asking her for anything more, or guiding her hand to his ass the way he did with Sean. She might be fine with it. She might even be into it, or she might not. Either way, she wouldn't understand. Not really. He finds the university library section on human sexuality, and spends a lot of time reading. It's a relief to know that there are words for it. Entries in the indices of serious-looking books, a body of scholarship, dissenting opinions on which Gus can educate himself. Gus had known all about people being gay and how you could get AIDS, but he had never heard of himself before. He has other girlfriends over the years, and even though he thinks about doing all the things he's learned about in the course of his research, he never quite brings himself to ask, and they never offer. He fires up his new 486 and looks at the AOL personals sometimes, looks for men even. But the only people interested seem to be white guys over the age of 50 who post embarrassing, unattractive pictures of themselves holding riding crops or wearing motorcycle boots. And Gus can't figure out how to filter his search results for skeeviness. For a while, he seriously considers having sex with someone like that anyway, just to see what it's like. But in the end, he can't bring himself to do it. Sometimes, on the occasions when Sean blows into town, Gus looks at him over pizza while handing him the PlayStation controller, and wonders what life would have been like if Sean had come to college with him, found something here to satisfy his curiosity and his energy. Maybe they would have had sex again, maybe not. Gus doesn't really regret it, but he does think about Sean's hand on his ass that one time when they were kids, the way Sean had hesitated, but known what to do. "You're really staying," Gus says one day, after they've just come back from the police station. He's a 29-year-old pharmaceutical salesman, which isn't how he imagined the future when he was a kid, but he's also Sean's best friend, which is exactly how he imagined it. And mostly these days, Sean sticks around Santa Barbara, so he even gets to be Sean's best friend on a regular basis. Solving crime is new, though. "Yes!" Sean spreads his arms wide to take in the office around him. "Gus, how many mysteries do I have to solve before you will believe in my psychic powers?" "Probably a lot more," Gus says, arching an eyebrow. "Since you don't have any psychic powers." Sean throws his arms in the air, fake angry. "You don't believe in me. I'm like Whoopi Goldberg in Ghost, forced to waste my gift on those who don't understand it." "First of all, don't compare yourself to Whoopi," Gus warns. "And second, what is up with that threesome ghost possession kiss?" "I know, right?" Sean agrees. "I gotta be possessed more often. Gus, make a note." Gus does. Sitting down, Sean picks up the phone and starts dialing what Gus presumes to be the jerk chicken place. "Don't forget," Gus starts to say, but Sean gives him a fond, reproachful look. "The plantain things, yes, I know." Sean smiles at him over the receiver. "Gus, I know what you like. Now hush, the lady who answers the phone has a very quiet voice." Gus rolls his eyes, but he can't help smiling a little, because Sean does know what he likes. He decides to ride this fake psychic detective agency thing out. Even if Sean is statistically unlikely to stay put for long, he might as well enjoy it while it lasts.
Gus, I can't move. I don't know why you think I can...
Yeah, but if you move your leg..."
Sean squirms wildly against him.
"I can't move. There's no more space under here." Gus tries again to get his stomach off of Sean's elbow and his thigh out from where Sean's knee is holding it to the underside of the bench they're hiding beneath,
But it's no good. Sean's right, there is no more space. Not unless they stick an arm or a leg out into the open, where they'd be seen. Is this even really necessary? Gus hisses. I mean, we could just say we're here to visit the church. Sean considers this. In retrospect, I admit that yours may have been the better strategy. But since we can't exactly crawl out from under a bench during a service and claim to be regular visitors, we'll have to save it for next time. Gus groans quietly and drops his forehead to rest on Sean's shoulder. I hate you, he says sincerely. You love me, Sean murmurs back and slaps Gus reproachfully on the thigh. Luckily, the baptism doesn't last too long, and they get out from under there before Gus can do something stupid, like kiss Sean's ear. Boost me up, Sean whispers, looking up at the little decorative ledge below Mr. McGovern's second-story window. At 34 years old, Gus has a long history as the guy who does the boosting up when Sean has a dumb idea, so he makes his stirrup out of his hands and takes the warm weight of Sean's leg against his chest. Once Sean is up, he turns and reaches his hand down, open-palmed, so that Gus can grab on, can balance on an upside-down clay pot and brace his foot against the drainpipe and scramble up beside him. How did you know the window was unlocked? Gus asks, keeping his voice low. I didn't, Sean shrugs and pushes the sash. Of course it's unlocked. If Gus were here with anybody else, it would be locked, like most windows on most houses are always locked. But Sean's always had a kind of magic that he carried around with him. Something that made good things happen, things that couldn't happen in normal, everyday life. And anyway, there isn't anybody else in the world who would pull Gus up onto a decorative ledge outside a dead guy's house at 3 o'clock in the morning as a prelude to a B&E, so maybe it all works out. When they're finally done at the McGovern house an hour later, Gus doesn't feel like driving all the way back to Sean's place, and Sean is in his usual state of post-felony late-night easy acquiescence, so he agrees easily enough to crash on Gus's couch. They brush their teeth together with the ease of long practice, taking turns spitting into the sink, with Gus on the left because he's a toothbrush switch hitter. When Sean has rinsed and Gus has said, to hell with flossing, just this once, they both move for the door at the same time and sort of get stuck in each other's way. Sean, Gus says impatiently, as Sean moves in exactly the opposite direction of the direction where he'd get out of Gus's way. Gus takes him by the shoulders, pushes him against the doorway. Just hold still. Okay, Sean says softly. Gus moves past him and goes to dig out a t-shirt and a pair of shorts for Sean to wear to sleep. When he comes back to the living room, Sean is slumped over the edge of the couch with his head pillowed on his arms, looking half asleep. Gus collapses down beside him. Here, Gus says, and tosses the clothes into Sean's lap. Thanks. Gus keeps meaning to get up and go to bed, except now he's been up so long that he doesn't really feel tired anymore and wonders whether he'll be able to get to sleep. Hey, Gus, Sean says after a minute. Yeah? Remember that time when we were kids and you boosted me up over the fence into Mrs. Henderson's yard? I remember her dog, Gus agreed. And when you boosted me up onto the roof of the gym? That time Jennifer Delacroix gave us pot? Yeah. Gus said. His shoulder presses warmly against Sean's on the couch. Sean sits up a little and turns his head to smile at Gus. That's a lot of boosts, is what I'm saying. Gus kisses him. Sean, after a second, kisses back. Do you wanna? Sean asks when they pull apart. Gus rolls his eyes. I can't believe you're still using that dumbass excuse for a pickup line, he laughs. Sean shrugs and snakes his fingers around Gus's wrist. Worked on you, didn't it? Yeah, when I was an 18-year-old virgin, Gus snorts. Sean's fingers stop suddenly. You were, he says. I thought, with Jennifer Delacroix. Are you kidding? Sean throws up a hand in exasperation. Well, there's my whole sexual history ruined, he says. Here I thought I had my first time with an older, more experienced... Sean, I'm 3 weeks older than you, Gus interrupts. Man of the world, someone who could educate me in the ways of love. I came on your Pantera t-shirt. You've ruined everything, Gus, Sean says fondly, and kisses him. When they get to Gus's bed, it's weird for a second. Sean taking off his shirt, Sean's hands on Gus's fly, but after a misplaced fit of the giggles, Gus is over it, is lying down on his side and kicking off his underwear, with Sean facing him like he's doing something they do all the time. Or like they didn't take 16 years between tries. Gus, Sean says, and grabs Gus by the wrist. Hey, Gus, like he does when he's trying to talk Gus into something. Slowly, deliberately, Sean guides Gus's hand over Sean's waist and down to cup his ass. Gus kneads firmly for a second and meets Sean's eyes. I want you to, Sean says, inexplicably. I've thought about it. You want... I don't have any... No, Sean says quickly, closing his eyes in frustration. Then he opens them suddenly, and Gus knows all too well the scheming look that comes over his face. I've done that enough, Sean says, his voice low and rough. He kisses Gus fast, dirty. When I was away, there were... with other men. Something low and hot uncoils in Gus's belly. Does Sean mean... I thought about you, Sean continues. Gus kneads his ass again and uses his grip to pull Sean closer, breathing hard all of a sudden. He's never heard Sean sound like this, breathy and hesitant and choked all at once. I always thought about you, but I only did it with strangers, Gus. Sean squirms back against Gus's hand, then forward, his dick brushing wetly against Gus's stomach. Sean, Gus says, helplessly, mouthing Sean's neck, then says it again, says, Sean. I let them fuck me, Sean says softly. But not you, never you, for years. Gus lands a firm, stinging slap on Sean's ass. Sean cries out with surprise and slings his thigh over Gus's hip, bringing their cocks together. Sean's forehead comes down hot against Gus's neck, and Gus worms an arm under him so that he can hold Sean's hand, cradle his neck with his palm. Gus counts off three long breaths, then when Sean doesn't speak, he does it again. He brings his hand up and smacks Sean hard, a little lower down this time. Sean moans quietly into Gus's shoulder. I wanted you, Sean says. Gus can barely hear him. He hits Sean again. Speak up, Sean, Gus says into his ear. I wanted you, he says again, louder. But I left you. A fourth slap, and Gus's hand is beginning to tingle. And I didn't, five, let myself, six, near you, seven, eight, nine. Gus, Sean says. Gus. Gus closes his eyes briefly and rubs up against Sean, thrusts against him almost mindlessly as he gropes Sean's ass, where Sean must be getting sore, must be getting red. Please, Sean, Gus pants. Sean brings his hand between them and strokes them both together, hard, perfect, and Gus brings his palm down against Sean's ass. 10, 11. Sean makes a whimpering noise in his throat and jacks them harder, his cock pushing against Gus's, his thigh heavy and solid over Gus's hip, his skin hot under Gus's hand. 12, 13, 14. Gus is thrusting fast into Sean's hand, and Sean bites at Gus's shoulder and comes just as Gus lands, 15, just before Gus is closing his eyes tight and shaking through his own orgasm, calling Sean's name. They take a little while to catch their breath, but Sean kisses him again right after, open-mouthed and sweet, playful and cajoling, like he's trying to talk Gus into something. It's a little while before Gus can get his breathing under control, can deal with the sudden reality that is Sean's hot skin pressed up against his own. But when Gus finally meets his eyes, Sean is grinning. Dude, he says, that was awesome. Gus can't help but grin back. You better believe it, he agrees, smug. I'm sticky and gross, though. Hang on. Sean is up in a flash and half running to the bathroom, naked and ridiculous, and Gus hasn't ever loved anyone in his life like he loves Sean at that moment. Outside Gus's window, the sun is just coming up. When Sean comes back with a wet face cloth and a towel, he wrinkles his nose. The thing about two dudes is all the mess, Sean says. Gus agrees. After a second, Gus asks, Did you mean what you said about all the other guys? Sean shrugs. Sort of, yeah. Then he looks Gus in the eye. I really did think of you, buddy, he says softly. He trails off. And you knew about me and the spanking thing? Sean smiles. Gus, come on. Not even I can watch Animal House that many times, or read that much Samuel Delaney, for that matter. Gus laughs. Sean finishes cleaning up and drops the towels to the floor. Face it, my friend, I've known you were a pervy spanking freak for years. He yawns and crawls under the covers, where he puts his cold, annoying feet on Gus's shins. It's a perfectly valid erotic identity, Sean, Gus says, nettled. Whatever, Sean agrees, and curls around him. I'm probably a pervy spanking freak, too. At first, Gus is a little taken aback by the easy press of Sean's body against his, but then slowly, awkwardly, he winds an arm around Gus's shoulders. Get some sleep, Sean instructs, as if Gus had given some indication that he might run a marathon or break out his dance party mix. We have to go down to the station at noon. Before Buzz goes on the Wednesday smoothie run, Gus agrees. His eyes close of their own volition. Under the covers, he lets his hand drift down past the small of Sean's back and falls asleep with his palm against the hot skin of Sean's ass. The end. This has been a recording of Growing Pains. You can leave feedback for the author at thingswithwings.dreamwith.org or for the reader at sophonisba.dreamwith.org. Thank you for listening.